The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the Hurling Show. It's just me and Brian here today. Brian, where I want to start with you straight away is, I don't know if you watched League Sunday and Jackie Terrell having to address something stupid that he said almost a bloody week ago, and here he is going into a big long spiel about how Limerick now are not going to win the All-Ireland when he had said something completely different the week before. And it was almost like Joanne Cantwell almost had to apologise for asking him a week later. This whole thing, I avoided it last week. I refused to ask any of the pundits about it because I couldn't believe it made such big news that a fella thinks a team is not big three. Like, who? Since when is there even a big three in hurling? How has this become such a big piece of news in the hurling world?
Yeah, slow news week, definitely. And you did allude to it yourself there in one of the Thursday podcasts. You know, hurling just goes silent, so it was just picked up. And Jackie, he's made his stance, and he had no choice then last night when Joanne spoke to him. He couldn't back down, so he had to keep going with it as far as he was as far as he was pushed. So I don't think he had any choice to say it. And look, it's subjective, obviously. It's his own opinion, and there is obviously a lot of statistics backing it up. Like, it is 45 years since they won their first one.
Yeah.
Like, the law of averages, it's going to be pretty hard to win the second one back to back. So, like, it's not rocket science he's saying here. So,
no.
I think it's a star of the teacup, being honest. And I think he's well justified in a lot of the points he made.
He looked very uncomfortable when he was speaking, trying to justify it. But this is the thing about it. He didn't initially say last week that they weren't going to retain it, which is completely understandable. Like, I mean, sure, the history is Tipperary couldn't do it, Clare couldn't do it, Galway couldn't do it. They're the three teams outside of the freak that is Kilkenny, who consistently did it, and obviously Cork did it. So that's not outlandish. He's saying they're not in the top three. He was saying they're not in the top three teams in the country, I think, which is what he originally said, which everybody did kind of get a little bit worked up, way too worked up about it. Then you had other pundits commenting on it, and you had Limerick having to respond to it. And you had, like, I mean, Jesus, it really took on a life of its own.
Yeah, and look, I wouldn't get too worried away with it, carried away with it. I think, like, the media are just picking up silly things at this time of the year. I was just thinking about this morning, actually, in relation to, say, we'll go to the rules. Now we're all praising referees for the application of the rules. A couple of weeks ago, it was a massive thing as well, and, you know, the referees were the worst thing in the world, and they were ruining hurling. So, look, I think this time of the year, it's all, you know, seven-day wonder, and this will all be forgotten about in another couple of days.
Yeah, exactly. I do understand the irony of me complaining about this while starting the show talking about it. So before anybody starts, I want to talk about goals here, Brian. Goals, 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 and they came in the Clare-Wexford game. That John Connellan goal was as good as a goal as you'll ever see. Do you know why? Because it was a football goal. That's why. This is where hurling is taking football's tactics, and they're running the ball, they're laying it off to a man running at pace, and then they're throwing it across the goal. So this was beautiful because it was a complete rip-off of a football goal. Discuss.
No, please. For starters, when you get in there, you'll just hand pass it over the bar. So don't even go there with this one. Talking about football, that rule has to go. It's such a cop out. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm sure you agree with me on that one.
It is.
No, look, super, and it is actually an element, and I've been saying it for a while. Wexford in particular, and Clare, the running style, that's all coming from football tactics. That's when I say that. That's what I mean. It's that running off the shoulder, you know, making sure that runners are coming from deep.
Yeah.
And you've seen both goals. You know, that was the style of it, and Clare in particular are excellent at that. We've said this a few times, Tony Kelly in particular, when he breaks a tackle, it's not just him breaking the tackle and going straight to the centre, it's the guys coming off the shoulders which are making the goals. And we saw that in last year's Munster final against Cork as well. David Reedy was the player that time. But, you know, it's great use of the ball, it's selfless hurling, and so that's a joy to watch. And from any manager's perspective, you know, you love that sort of stuff. Actually, Kilkenny had something similar opportunity against Tipperary yesterday. Pádraig Walsh broke straight through the centre and had Billy Ryan coming off the shoulder and he, you know, Park Walsh tapped it over the bar, and I was screaming at him, not because I was shouting for Kenny, but screaming at him just to do the right thing and pop it inside, and that Kenny had a certain goal. And you know, that's the difference. You know, Clare and these teams are so used to this short game, that you know, the intricate moves, that they're just doing that so naturally.
Yeah, even Davy Fitzgerald, who like is a wing back, getting up that far, have the presence of mind to say, here, I'm going to square this rather than, you know, tap it over myself. But did Cork not make that running game famous back in 04-05, Brian? They, with the O'Connors and Kenny, and they played that running game off the shoulder, which was the first time I'd ever seen it used in hurling.
Definitely, and I actually trained under, it was Gerard Cunningham, Limerick Gerard Cunningham trained us in UL, and we played the running game with an average enough team, and we actually ended up getting to a Fitzgibbon final on it. So it was completely alien to the style of hurling at the time. At Cork back then, probably their half back line used to sit a little bit more. Sean Ogg, Ronan Curran, John Gardner at the time, they'd break the tackle and offload to their two runners, Jerry O'Connor and Tom Kenny, and they were the two boys. They were the fulcrum of it all, those two boys in middle field. Whereas you see now with Clare, like if you said David Fitzgerald break up the field, you could see Lee Chin bursting a nut to try and get back and face them.
Yeah.
Like, would there be anything worse? And that's completely alien to hurling, when you see your wing back tearing up the field like that. I know you're probably used to football, but in hurling, oh my God.
It just doesn't happen. Yeah, going without the ball like that.
Yeah, so it's a nightmare. It is a key part of David Fitz's teams, and that's probably still the legacy of the Clare hurlers at the moment, that they're used to that kind of style of, you know, the halfback's not afraid to venture up the field, and you know, like look how far away he was from his own role, you would say, if you're playing your 15 normal positions of playing a wing back, and he breaking through like that. But no, fair play to him, and he's a hard man to stop. That guy, on and off the team last year, he's a super hurler, that type.
Yeah, I think he is too. Definitely, I think he is. He's a big, powerful man. Then we had the Shane Murphy goal, which was a thing of absolute beauty. Messi scored a goal against Sevilla this weekend, and I don't know if you saw it, but it was taken on the full volley like that, which is an absolutely sensational goal. So it was Conor McDonald who came on. It was a backhand pass back to one of the O'Connors, and then a hand pass to Chin, and then he mishit it, and then Murphy just came from nowhere and just flush. I'm wondering how difficult it is to hit a ball coming across like that on the volley. Like, I mean, it's a tiny ball.
Yeah, and in fairness to Tom Murphy, like he's been their go-to sweeper for the last couple of years, more notable as a back, and again another player off up the field. He's been playing probably wing back midfield at the moment, but goes up the field and catches it lovely, as you said, and bounces. Keeper had no chance too. He had no chance to find the net, but a beautiful goal. It's not easy to do. I think Pat Horgan scored one of the most delightful goals I've ever seen in a club game. You'll often see it on YouTube. It does the rounds on Twitter. Pat Horgan, a line ball against Ballygunner down in Walsh Park, and he catches it just on the volley on the edge of the 6-yard box and roofs it up into net. That's the quintessential volley if you ever want to watch that.
Right, okay. Did Henry Shefflin get one in an All-Ireland final off the volley like that? No,
he got one in a Leinster final. Maybe he Leinster. Doubled on one against, I think it was nearly certain it was a Leinster final against Wexford, and he did bat one. He passed one into DJ, and DJ batted one into net. So there has been a few down through the years, but it's rare you see them. They are delightful goals.
Yeah, they are definitely delightful. So Clare 13 points up and leave Wexford back into it, and straight away it sprung to my mind Kilkenny and Nolan Park last year, where they're destroying Kilkenny and they're 11 points up and they have to work very hard for that win as well. And I'm just wondering how this happens to Clare. Like, I mean, are you so far ahead, and this has happened in games I've played in, mostly with Portlaoise, because you'd be winning very well, and suddenly you go into daydream mode and you're thinking of maybe that night, maybe at intercounty level they don't do that now, but you can definitely go into daydream mode during the game where you're not concentrating like you would, or you might try a fancy pass that you wouldn't, and then suddenly the other team get a run on you, and it's very, very difficult to click back out of the kind of lazy mode that you've got yourself into.
Yeah, and I suppose in hurling, like if you just look at that goal that Sean Murphy scored yesterday, there were 7 points in at a time. Clare, you know, they were just seeing out the game at the time. Wexford were huffing and puffing, they weren't really making any inroads. But then all of a sudden, 7 points to 4 points, it's just a new game completely. Now you're suddenly going, oh God, we're only 2 scores away.
Yeah, like, and you're not ready
for
that.
You've got a little bit of momentum.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas in football, even 7 back down to 4 still doesn't seem enough. You know, you can get your blanket defence back there and shut out the game and hold on to the ball for a while. Whereas in hurling, you invariably you do win back the ball, and the whole momentum seems to swing very quickly. And last year in particular, in that league system in Championship in Leinster and Munster, we've seen so many games where teams were 8-9 points up but they weren't safe.
Yeah,
and it is amazing. Like it's just a whole momentum swing. As you said, players do get a little bit probably lazier to try things they wouldn't have tried otherwise. And you know, it's just, you know, I just think hurling's amazing like that, the way it can swing and goals. I suppose essentially it does take a big score like that, a goal, to kind of change the whole momentum and the crowd can get behind you then as well.
So like, I mean, at what point in hurling do you think we're safe here? Like, I mean, you can't, like, for example, a 10 point lead isn't outlandish to think we could be, like, what would you be saying at half time if you're 10 points up against a team that was a 50-50 game before? Like, are you know, are you still thinking there's a good chance these lads could come back into this?
Yeah, I think, look, when you get into double figures, I think you're starting to get safe at that stage, but you still have a lot of hurling through. Like 35 minutes at intercounty level is huge. Even like, you know, 5-6 points is nothing nowadays of a lead. You know, you wouldn't be one bit worried about that. A couple of points pulls it back in. I think the big thing, actually, speaking of all these things, when you're on a chasing a team, you have to get in front. Just getting back to 1 or 2 points, or even getting level, is not enough. It seems to be that's all the. All the energy is almost expended by the time you get to the draw. You need to get in front by that point or two to try and really see it out. That's when a team can actually fold on you altogether. So it is amazing. But no, I'd never be overly worried if, as long as you're not more than, I suppose 10 points seems to be kind of the figure that you're starting to run into a bit of trouble there when you're trying to pull in that you know, that's, you're onto four scores there, like, you know, in terms of, you know, 3 goals and a pint, and 3 goals will be hard done by, but you know, it tends to be just a little step too far at 10 points.
But that's an interesting point in when you're on the chase and you're trying to peg back a lead, and like you have it back to one, and you've done so much work, and then the other team gets just a point. So now you have to get now suddenly you have to get three. You know what I mean?
When
you have a big lead, you only need to chip away at 2 or 3 points to make the comeback really, really difficult.
Yeah, definitely, and invariably then teams will throw so much at it. And they've just expended all their energy. A couple of minutes ago, you might get a breakaway goal, or as you said, a point or two, and it just finishes. We kind of saw it yesterday with Limerick and Cork as well. Yesterday, Limerick made a big comeback.
Yeah.
Cork just steadied it in the 71st minute. Get a point or two, and next minute, it's 2 or 3 points. It's just, the energy's just gone out of you. You know, you've just exuded all avenues of that stage.
Yeah. Do you mention that game? Connerly Hand scored a goal. Like, I mean, we don't, you know, short puckouts when they completely go wrong, and we don't often see it from Limerick. But like, I mean, Tom Condon won't want to see that again, so he took the short puck out, and for some strange reason he went running straight for Seamus Harnady and kind of got himself blocked up instead of going into open ground, and then panicked and threw it back, I think it was to Finn, and then it went missing and Lehan, and that was the end of the game then.
Yeah, strange decision. I don't know why he ran. I agree with you now. I don't know why he ran back into contact, because the whole other side of the field was wide open.
Wide open.
Just taken a couple of yards. And when you are under pressure, look, there's nothing wrong with it. Lampas, like, you know, I know we're all looking for perfect hurling, but it's like almost in soccer, you know, you see some of the fullbacks trying to do fancy stuff. There's times just put that over the sideline. You know, it's something similar in hurling. There's just time comes the time. Will you just get rid of the ball? Get out of the danger zone. So it was a strange thing to do. Unless they have some sort of tactic that they do want to draw the contact and look for the runner coming off the shoulder. Something not exactly the same, but I do know Kilkenny years ago, we won the analysis. One of the times we did actually use analysis against teams, we looked at Kilkenny and we found that if you showed them the sideline, you expect, 9 times out of 10, you expect players to go down the sideline. Kilkenny were unbelievable at turning back inside you,
right,
and hitting what you would almost expect, you know, your weak shoulder, because you'd be expecting them to go down the line, and they'd always cut inside and look for contact. So that was a clear tactic by Kilkenny down to the year. So maybe that's something similar with Limerick, that they're actually looking for this contact and expecting to get through it.
And why would Kilkenny have wanted the contact in that situation? I understand definitely a lot of tactics, even in football, is to show them down the line. And if you're going down the line, your options are seriously limited. So I'd always want to be cutting back in the field where you've got a few, you know what I mean? You're giving the fella you pass to a lot more options than what you would on the sideline. I'm wondering why they want the contact, or they're just actually trying to cut in field.
It's just a cut in field, obviously, because if you, as you said, you know, the back invariably is showing you down the line. You know, so that's as you said, that's the least dangerous place, where if you kind of like, look, we'll call your bluff there now, and we'll actually go at you where you least expect it.
Right.
You know, so maybe there is something in that in Limerick as well, that they actually do try to draw the contact, and then are so used to contact that they're able to offload the ball to a man completely free then at that stage.
Yeah, maybe.
Almost happened yesterday, but it just broke down, obviously.
Yeah, it definitely looked strange when he ran straight for him. What did you make of the Billy Ryan free, where the referee said he swung back to hurl? I'd never seen that before, and I didn't think there was much in it, but after the referee made so many gestures of what he was given the free for on the replay then, I kind of saw what he meant.
Yeah, I was doing commentary on that actually in third assist, and everyone was perplexed, couldn't understand what happened. And it must have been from the angle he was looking at, because when you look at the replay of it, Billy Ryan went into contact, went to try and swing back, you know, and use his right hand, as you would do, to push him off just to buy that yard of space. And it just, maybe from the angle that Johnny Murphy was looking at it, he thought that he actually hit him in the head. But no, there was nothing in that. But in fairness to Johnny Murphy, he did get a hell of a lot right yesterday. He did get that one wrong, though, to be fair.
Right, okay. Another one I want to mention out of that match to you was a classic, and it's happened to me in matches, and it's almost like a Christmas present, where you get a shoulder, and it might even be a hard shoulder, but it knocks you in the direction that you're actually looking to go in. So it happened with Walter Walsh in the first half, and I'd say Walter never ran as fast in his life. You might remember it ended up with a Pádraig Walsh wide, where he should have scored. So I think it was Michael Breen hit him, and Michael Breen's a big block of a man, but it was on the 45, but he drove Walter back towards the Tipperary goal.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And Breen, yeah, two big men. Walter Walsh is humongous. And to see him yesterday, it was a great battle between him and Pádraig Maher, tit for tat, and savage. It was worth the admission alone. But, you know, as you said, that's a sweet shoulder to get, and you're not going to, you know, Michael Breen might knock a lot of players, but you're not going to knock Walter Walsh too simple. And it just, as you said, opened up acres of space from in the middle of Thurles. He could have had a shot himself, threw it off to Pádraig Walsh, and you would have expected Pádraig to score that. Pádraig actually got 2 points in play and could have had four or five, actually. He's, after getting a new lease of life, he's definitely saying to Cody, hey, don't ever even consider putting me back fullback again. He's doing everything he can. He was shooting at every opportunity he could to try and make sure that he's not put back in there.
He's electric, though. It's such a waste when you see that, you know what I mean? But we'll talk about that in performance of the weekend. So there was no highlights of the match in Parnell Park, which ended in a little bit of controversy, in that there was a penalty given, and it looked like there was no penalty at all. So it was a long, hopeful ball by Austin Gleeson. You know, back to the wall, we need a goal here. Darragh O'Connell and Tommy Ryan were lying in the ground wrestling each other, and Fergal Horgan interpreted it to be a penalty. So the Dublin were going absolutely off their heads. Then, to rub salt in the wounds, he actually sends off O'Connell, what appeared to be a straight red card. And this was because O'Connell, it looks like, did too much complaining. Is there anything more frustrating for a player to get a bad decision given against you and then to get sent off for giving out about this bad decision? It's like a double bloody whammy. And then you have Alan Nolan who saves the penalty. So, like, I mean, there was a whole load of controversy. Would have been nice to have got a package of that. Now, I know you're dyed-in-the-wool RT man now, doing all their co-commentaries and everything, so you won't want to criticise League Sunday here.
No, but you would have liked to seen actually highlights of that. Like, that was the only big game in 1B. So, you know, look, a lot of the other games are, you know, they're not great to be looking at from in terms of the quality compared to the other games. But Dublin and Waterford was one of the key ones, and I would have liked to have seen, you know, a bit on that. But going back to getting booked for mounting the referee, I got booked years ago myself, and I think it was actually Leinster Final 2004. For giving out to the referee, but all my mates are convinced that I was booked for diving, so I just want to put that on record. I was booked for mounting, not for diving.
Maybe you're mounting about the dive, maybe, or something.
Maybe that was it. But Dublin, like, in fairness to them, I did say it to you last week, I didn't understand why they didn't go back all the way, because they've only a couple of big games in this 1B league, and you know, they seem to put out a much stronger team. And, you know, they went for Waterford, and Waterford didn't put up a great score, being honest. The 3-3 score there at one stage in the first half, it was just poor scoring. And then You know, they almost snuck it, but by all accounts, Dublin were by far the most impressive. You know, I think it was 126
yeah.
before, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, like, that's serious shooting.
Yeah, you know? when you see a scoreline...
They still have a few more, like, to come in, you know.
Yeah, when you see a scoreline like that, it kind of tells the story that goals were just keeping one team in it. Matty Kenny says he didn't see it. Like all good managers, I didn't see it. So he's talking about the incident. So I thought that was a good one. Ye have to do us a favour now with Carlow. And that, like, I know that I do take your point that the Waterford Dublin game was the big game, but I thought Laois Carlow, like, I mean, when you're talking about giving other teams a little bit of the limelight, this was a really big game because it was really winner takes all to get into a quarter final, and it was a local derby, and it was two teams that maybe deserved a little bit of a package as well. Now, obviously, in fairness to Laois Sunday, they had a double show last night, which was, you know, really difficult to get everything into that time. I just think, like, 17 all, Carlow got a very late score to equalise it up, and obviously I would have liked to have seen a little bit of that potentially, even for the players themselves. But see, Offaly now have to beat Carlow, and I actually think Offaly will beat Carlow. I think they'll do Laois a favour. I can't see Offaly wanting to lose to whippersnappers Carlow, you know, after maybe comments that were made. I know that's not the Carlow panel, but at the same time, there's tradition there, and Carlow just don't beat Offaly, and that's the reality of it. So I have a feeling Offaly could beat Carlow in that one.
Hard to know, being honest. It seemed the first half was poor yesterday against Galway. They battled hard. They had only 4 points on the board, but there was an extremely strong wind, and they did come back into the game for large periods of the second half. But they're getting better every week, but unfortunately, you know, it's still not anywhere near enough. I don't know. Being honest, I've been beaten down a little bit at the moment, so I'm a little bit pessimistic in terms of Offaly's future. I'm usually so hugely optimistic, but I won't be holding out a whole pile of... It would literally depend what team he puts out. It depends what way Kevin approached it, whether he's going to put it all into the game the week after, in terms of the relegation game, and maybe look at the Carlow game as giving a few guys a run out. So it really depends on what his take on the whole game is.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're hoping you can do us a favour anyway. Before we move on into
We won't be doing it for you now, will we?
I can't imagine you would be. It's a lesser of two evils, maybe we are. Which would be more evil? Laois would probably be more evil for you than Carlow. Yeah, Carlow are on the other side. Yeah, because we'll talk about Tipperary Kilkenny in the next part. But just on that game, Callanan was having a nightmare on the frees, and Jason Ford took over. I'm just wondering, like, Seamus Callanan was given the frees for the year. Now, I think he'd missed three frees. He'd missed one from play. Sheedy said after the game, everyone has days like that as a player or free taker. Seamus will work through it and get back to the high standards, he said himself. No better man to do it. As a free taker, would you be put out by that, or did Sheedy decide that, or did the two players amongst themselves decide it?
It was actually a strange one, in that the first free Tipperary got was a close-in free. Cannon tapped it over the bar. The next free was 60 yards out, and Jason Ford actually took it.
Oh.
That was in the first half.
Right.
So it obviously had been decided beforehand that any long-range frees Jason Ford was now going to hit. And that happened. It just so happened to be at the last two Tipperary games. It happened down in Wexford Park the week before. Cannon missed a couple of frees as well, and Jason Ford went out and hit a really good free into the wind from about 70 yards out. So obviously Sheedy had made a slight change to the order then for the game yesterday. And then Jamie missed three. So he just, I suppose he said, right, Jason Ford can take over from there.
But would that
it
be
is
Jason,
a tough one, I think.
Would it be Jason Ford and Callanan saying themselves, kind of, or would it be too much competition between those two, do you think, for him to relinquish them to Ford?
Yeah, I'd say Sheedy probably called it himself, because
right.
as a free taker yourself, it's a tough one, because you need to almost know you're number one. I know you can say healthy competition is good for you and all that, but you need that complete confidence of the whole panel where they're going, oh look, you missed that one, don't worry about it, you'll score the next one, you know. So
yeah.
It's a tough mindset of a free taker, and you need that kind of burning confidence within yourself at all times. I mean, if someone breathing down your neck, it can actually make it worse. And I think we saw that similar enough in Galway a couple of years ago with Cooney and Canning. You know, Cooney was flying it on the frees and Canning wasn't about, but then Canning came back in, and it's, you know, what do we leave Cooney on him, do we not? And, you know, Andy Cunningham at the time didn't put Joe Canning back on him for a while, and then, you know, Dunne came back in and said, right, actually, do you know what, Joe Canning's number one, and that's it, simple as that. So I think that's what Sheedy has done from the outset. So I think he'll definitely get another chance at him next weekend, but he'll have to probably up his scoring rate from that perspective. But look, Shemmy is more than capable. He's actually been a little bit unlucky in that he misrolls a couple of them, and that can really affect it. So,
all right.
You know, your strike straight after that. That particularly the first one he misrolls it. It is important. So different free taking styles. You see so many players now actually balancing the ball in the hurl. They're fouling it, and that's actually something I'd like to see pulled up. Alan Murphy was at yesterday for Kilkenny. Dermot Burns always fouls the ball every time he rises it. He holds it on the hurl for ages. Pat Horgan, borderline as well. So there is a few hurlers actually at it.
Right, okay. And when you miss rise it, is that a concentration thing or is that the pitch or what is it?
Could be. It's generally the pitch. Actually, my own style of free taking, I used to stand over the ball, similar to say what Jamie used to do. But actually, I changed to standing back from the ball simply because if at least when you're standing back from the ball and you step into it, if you do misrise it, you can move your feet and you're coming from behind the ball. Whereas when you're standing over it and you misrise it, you could be gone ahead of the ball.
Oh, okay.
So I actually changed my style at a young enough age to take that into account.
And so when they're, some of them roll the hurl over the ball and get it up that way, and others kind of jab under it and throw it up there. What's the difference between those two techniques?
Totally your own preference. It's whatever you got used to the practice. And some, you know, you'll talk to both of those guys and they'll tell you totally different things. I jab it personally, but as I said, I stand back from the ball, so I'm jabbing it to you couldn't roll rise the way I hit it. And some guys, when they stand over the ball, they have the choice and whichever works best for them. It tends to be roll rising. You kind of have to be an open side hurler, so if you're a right handed hurler, you'd have to hit it on your right side. It's a lot harder if you're hitting it, say, backhanded, or your left side if you're roll rising.
It depends what
hurl you have in your, or sorry, which hand your hurl is in and which side you actually hit it off.
Right, okay, because I often see Shane Dowling's free taking technique, where I think, does he jab under it, but he throws it right up there, like, and hits it at a high point, and I'm thinking, geez, he's making life pretty difficult for. It looks like a very difficult technique that he uses for the free taking.
So again, he's trying to get the ball high so he can move his feet.
So balance his feet, that's right? Yeah, yeah. So
yeah, that's the key thing. So you're trying to generating your power with your feet. You know, so you don't want to, obviously there is arm action, but you don't want too much arm action either. You're gonna pull across the ball. So it's trying to find that balance every single time that you hit the ball. If you notice Shane Dowling, and this is a key thing, like whether you're 20 yards out or 60 yards out, you should be trying to hit the ball the same way every time.
Right.
So you're trying to drive through the ball. So you know that's why you often see Dowling driving the ball out over the back net. So sometimes he's acting the maggot. but generally, you know, that's why the ball goes so far behind the goal and you need the backstoppers. And I remember being taught that at a young age, that, you know, don't ever try this, just tap it over the bar from 30-40 yards out, because that's when you won't follow through enough and you won't get a clean striking ball.
Yeah, we'd love them in a Moor Park when we were young lads, because we'd be legging it out the back into the backfield to rob the slitter then when you'd have lads that would like to clear the back net.
Yeah, there's many a young lad has plenty of bag of slitters, I tell you from that.
Oh yeah, drive it high and long and we'll be ready. It'll be a race between about 20 young fellas then to get this slitter.
War then.
Alright, we'll come back and we'll look at the Kilkenny tip game.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't. But
you didn't let Shamey talk at a hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a hurley launch, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
There's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes, you know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
So Liam Sheedy said on League Sunday last night, he was interviewed after the game and he went, very disappointed to lose to Auer. And then he kind of slight pause and then went, neighbours Kilkenny, where I'd say there was another ending to that sentence that he might have liked to put in there. But like, I mean, this would be worrying for Tipperary. Again, we have to remember that this is only the league. There is a full month for April and then there's the real business. But I have a feeling Tipperary are trying to target this league and get back to winning ways and, you know, get it back on track. So, like, looking at the bigger picture, they can't panic too much. But, Jesus, I'd say internally or privately, Liam Sheedy is going, Jesus, we need a win here.
Yeah, and it's like they've forgotten how to win the big game to this stage.
Yeah.
They really should have won yesterday. Now, they came late. They went 13-9 down. They scored six in a row to go 15-13 up. They had a couple of chances. I actually turned around to the commentator with me and I said, do you know what, Tip are going to see this out now, because Kilkenny looked to have, you know, run out of all kind of options at this stage. But I don't know, they just seemed to, as I said, forgotten how to win these games, just grab the bull by the horns and just get over the line. And, you know, it is disappointing. And they didn't get enough out of forwards, essentially. They still have problems. They still have a lot of things to answer now, being honest. And there's a huge kind of almost arrogance about Tip hurling. Like, you know, they, you know, you'd swear to work Kilkenny the way they've won All-Ireland's year in, year out. Like,
yeah.
But don't get me wrong, these guys are serious hurlers, but they still have only won two All-Ireland in the last 10 years, you know.
Yeah, it's not like maybe it is a psychological thing. They've won one of their last nine competitive games. This is a terrible run they're in. And, like, I mean, when a team is on a terrible run of games like that, you'd imagine maybe the manager might come in and make wholesale changes and really try to put his own stamp on it. But Sheedy hasn't really done that. So, like, James Barry, Ronan Maher, Seamus Kennedy, Padraig Maher were all in the backs. Noel McGrath, Bonner Maher, Michael Breen, Bubbles Dwyer, Jason Ford, Shamie Callan and Niall Maher. He's really sticking with the players who are on this awful run of form.
Yeah, and these aren't the guys I'm talking about being arrogant. Like, these guys are honest and they are giving it everything year in, year out for Tipperary. But there's no one else putting their hand up, really. You know, the one and under 21 All-Ireland last year, there's not too many going to come in off that team to make the step up. So, yeah, I think they're in a little bit of trouble. They've gone back to James Barry, a full-back, Padraig Maher, centre-back, but the square pegging around hole and Ronan Maher, a cornerback.
That's not working.
I don't think it's not going to work, no. Being honest. I know last week against Wexford, when Wexford played their sweeper, allowed Ronan Maher to go to centre-back and Paddy to sit in the pocket and sweep. Look, that's grand. That's more natural. But I don't think it's going to work with him at cornerback. So they still have a couple of things to answer. There's no sign of Cottle Barrett since the opening of the league. So he hasn't been on the panel. So maybe he's been injured at the moment. They do need to get game time into him. But I think they have a bit of a problem in midfield as well. They brought Noel McGrath to midfield, maybe to try and get him out and get into a bit of loose play. And he did get a couple of points yesterday. But there's no one else really stepping up in midfield. Michael Breen is, you know, being hit or miss, though he did play centre forward yesterday.
What about the young lad from the under 21s? I mentioned him in the preview show. He's a real fast, direct player who scored a goal. Did he score a goal in the Gaelic grounds? Was that in the final? He's a real kind of ball of energy. I can't think of his name now.
Willie Connors, by any chance? Yeah, I don't know. Could have been, but again, look, they need to get these guys playing consistently. Willie Connors is on and off the last couple of games, but I suppose they essentially, you know, there's a couple of these players that are getting chances, but they need to take them as well. Essentially, it does come back to the players themselves. Like Bonner Maher were playing there yesterday again. He's been there around a long time, real honest player, but I don't think he touched the ball yesterday. He had no influence on the game whatsoever.
I think Bonner's a traditional man who'll win a puck out, who'll break onto a break from a puck out, but the short stick passing game, I don't think is Bonner Maher's forte at all.
No, definitely not. And the game again has moved on a lot, where you don't really have a place for, you know, that kind of dog anymore. You know, and the rest of them will do the scoring. Unfortunately, and that's why I'm retired, you have to be both a dog and be able to score. So, you know, you need to be a jack of all trades up there in the forwards at the moment. So I think, Bonner at the moment, maybe he's just going through a bad run of form, but he's doing neither at the moment.
When you looked at the game, though, like, I mean, it was a poor enough game, and you pass your minds back to maybe 10 years ago when you had Owen Kelly and Lark Harbutt, and you had Henry Shefflin and Eddie Brennan and Owen Larkin and Richie Power, all these legendary players, and Tipperary and Kilkenny played out some unbelievable league games. And, like, you look through the Kilkenny team, like, I mean, how Kilkenny went down and beat Tipperary and Thurles with, like, young Murphy in midfield, you had John Donnelly, you had Walter Walsh, fair enough, he'd be on it, you had Malone on the wing that we wouldn't know much about, you had Billy Ryan, you had Liam Blanchfield, and you had Martin Keown. Like, we're talking about a very, very inexperienced Kilkenny team going to Tipperary and beating a much stronger on paper Tipperary team.
Yeah, and being honest, I thought the boys were talking a little bit of rubbish last night. They were going on about, you know, Kilkenny and Tip and Thurles is the litmus test for any Tip and Kilkenny teams. sorry now, boys, and Jackie, you're talking about the top three. At the moment, neither of these teams are in the top three. So I don't know if this is the big fixture that it was 4 or 5 years ago. So I think they were, you know, I think they were given a little bit too much respect last night on telly.
Well, there was it was a tip man and a Kilkenny man. So you're about it's
yeah,
obvious
exactly.
where yeah.
And look, they were, both of them were involved in these massive games, and you know, I was down at some of them, and they were savage games.
Yeah,
you know, huge intensity. But well, that's Tip and Kilkenny has fallen off that pace at the moment. So it's not your litmus test at the moment. And as you said, that Kilkenny team was very ordinary. Now they're working hard and they're honest and they're obviously decent hurlers, but in terms of the real top quality at the moment, like Limerick wiped the floor with them the week before.
Yeah.
You know, and we were eulogising about Limerick last week and how far Kilkenny were off. Obviously they responded, and they did respond in the right fashion, but at the same time they were still there to be beaten yesterday. They weren't fantastic. They just were honest and they kept going and they kept themselves in the game, and they ground it out. But it didn't, it's not like they went and scored 220 yesterday or anything. They'd only one half goal chance, as I alluded earlier. They'd no other shot on goal. Neither team had, been honest. So you know, it was enjoyable because it was tight and stuff. So it wasn't the worst game of hurling I was ever at. But at the same time, it did lack a little bit of quality for what you expect from Kilkenny and Tipperary.
Well, that's the thing. And like, I mean, you have to just give Kilkenny some credit, even though I did call out their team there. And like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, the names don't blow you away on paper. Like, I mean, they're young fellas and they're gamey, but it's not like they're young legends in the making coming up through the ranks. Like, I mean, for them to be able to turn it around after Tipperary getting a run of 6 points in a row to go 15-13 up, and Kilkenny were dead in the water at that stage. Now Leahy and Richie Hogan made a huge impact off the bench. They were both excellent, and like, I mean, they're guaranteed starters for me in the Kilkenny team. But the Kilkenny are just Kilkenny, and they're never beaten, and it's just some quality in them.
Yeah, it's amazing. And actually I was looking at a statistic yesterday. When Cody started in 99, the league was in Tipperary's between the fixtures between Tipperary and Kilkenny, it was in Tipperary's favour 26-16, and yesterday saw Kilkenny go in front 33-32.
Right.
So he's completely turned it around. So it just shows how much of an impact Cody has had on that Kilkenny team, obviously, but how much Kilkenny have had it over Tipperary over the last number of years as well. And you know, Tip just at the moment don't know how to win. You know, you're alluding to it already, they don't know how to win these tight games at the moment over the last year or two, but they definitely don't know how to win them against Kilkenny.
Definitely don't. So Cody must have said when he took over that he wants to knock Tipperary off their fucking perch or whatever. But that's it. So where do Tipperary go from here? Like, I mean, Brendan Cummins said last night, I don't know if this is the fix. He said the first time Sheedy took over, they needed a good win away to snap them out of it. Like, I mean, is easy a fix as that, or are Tipperary have an identity crisis, a leaders crisis, and winning the tight games crisis?
I think he has inherited problems, Sheedy, to be fair. So he is trying to figure out his best 15. You know, we've hit a few of these points. They're not getting a huge amount of players stepping up consistently to get on that first 15 then as well. And then he needs to figure out essentially where do you play Pádraig Maher, because he's brilliant. Like, he is exceptional. But if you play him centre back, that means Ronan Maher's not centre back. So you need to find the balance. And they were trying him full back as well. So what do you do with Pádraig Maher as well? Do you just play him wing back, similar to the way Tommy Walsh was with Kilkenny, best hurler in the game, and just leave him there, like, you know? And yeah, he'll win everything in that side of the field and drive forward and get you a point or two probably from wing back as well. It allows Ronan Maher to be more at home at centre back. So there's a couple of questions to answer, I think, still. And Jamie Canlan, while he was excellent against Clare, he's been very hit or miss of late as well, because I saw him 2 weeks previous in the Munster League against Clare. He never got a puck at it. He was poor against Wexford, even though he got he was at the end of a move and got a goal, and he got one good pint. So he's only chipping in with about a pint from play at the moment, and I still think they need to get more from him as well. And so Sheedy then has made a big call, and you've said this in the list of the three, but he said Callan's my main man, he's captain, he's full forward, everything's going to go through him. And last year that was Jason Ford, and he was unbelievable last year. His scoring rates both from play and from freeze last year were phenomenal. And then Jason Ford's been on periphery now for most of this league. Like, he was he was, you know, he was completely anonymous yesterday. And, you know, I think they need to get more from him. The one good thing they saw yesterday was Bubbles. Bubbles chipped in with 4 points, and I know you'll talk about him later on. But that's the first sign of him producing anything now in the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, definitely. See, the Tipperary game plan was blown out of the water by Galway in the league final 2 years ago. They put Cathal Mannion on Pádraig Mar and ran him all over the field. And they hammered Tipperary in that final. And then Cork saw this. So Cork ended up putting Luke Mead or somebody on him. And I was at that game in Thurles. And he ran Pádraig Mar ragged. And Leahan ran Ronan Mar all over the place. And exposed them for pace. And I don't think the defence have ever recovered for that. I don't know. Does every team try to do this on them now? Where, like, obviously Kilkenny didn't do it yesterday when they had Walter Walsh. And maybe that's why it was such a great battle with Pádraig Mar. But Pádraig Mar, Ronan Mar don't like marking fellas who are going to run them all over the place.
No, and I agree with you. But this is where, in modern day hurling, why are they being exposed so much? Why is the Tipperary midfield and half forward so far away from them?
Right.
You know, you go to Limerick, like Limerick's half forward, we talked about this before, Limerick's half forwards drop so deep. Kilkenny used to do it in their pump, they drop so deep. Galway's half forwards are constantly working back, and their midfield working back as well. So it does come back to their half forward line in midfield. I think
system,
they did that really well against Clare in particular in the league. So they need to tighten up that midfield area and make a battleground out of the mid, because if it gets into a battle in that area, that's where Pádraig Mar and Ronan Mar are going to come to the fore.
Right, OK. What did you make of the free at the end? Like, I mean, Liam Sheedy says Paddy thought it wasn't a pick-up. Whether it was or it wasn't, it ended up being the winning score. I don't know how Pádraig could argue it wasn't a pick-up. Now, obviously, it happens in football as well. You'll probably know yourself by how you catch the ball. It might have been a centimetre off the ground because of the weight of it. But, like, I mean, for anybody watching it, it was a clear pick-up off the ground. Now, it might not have been. You know what I mean? But it was too close to get away.
You're convinced as a player you didn't do it.
Yeah.
And there's no one going to change your opinion. It was unfortunate because it was, you know, Paddy had played, you know, fairly well now, to be fair to him. So it wasn't well. But look, some free from Owen Murphy.
Wasn't it?
He had nailed it, and he nailed one the other side of the field just before that as well. Hilariously, when his brother Alan was still on the field, there was another free back another 10 metres and Alan waved to Owen to go away from it, and Alan poked it wide. So I was actually saying it at the time, no, when you're actually playing out the field, you just know that an outfield player is going to force it in that situation, where a goalie is used to the whole game, you know, opening his shoulders and driving the ball. So in those situations, sometimes you are better leaving it to the goalkeeper.
And what about Alan then? How good is he? Like, I mean, was that his debut? I don't remember hearing about him before.
No, he played a lot of last year, corner forward actually.
Oh.
So he plays in the forwards for his club Glenmore, so he's more at home up there. He's honest, he works hard, and fairness to him, probably just a step below the standard that they need at the moment in Kilkenny. But, you know, look, in fairness to him, he hit his frees really well. He was busy around middle of the field, but I think when they have all their top hurlers back, I would see him struggling to make that first 15.
All right, okay. So was the whole mood around Thurles kind of very low after the game? Like, I mean, what are people saying as you're walking down? Because you were doing the match, I presume you parked down around the square and you're walking down with them. Or the Tipperary fans are very difficult to please. Like, I mean, they're kind of. You've alluded to it, they've an arrogance about them, and some people might wonder whether they deserve to have that arrogance or not, but they have it, whether you like it or not. Like, are they giving out?
No, they're still behind Sheedy at the moment, and there was a lot of them came onto the field afterwards, and, you know, they were getting behind the team whenever they could, you know, whenever the team gave them reasons to shout, especially right. When Bubbles got that point in the first half, the place erupted, and, you know, coming down the home stretch when Tipperary were scoring those points. No, they really were behind them. So they know it's a work in progress. I think they realised last year how far they were off it. And, you know, they're still hopeful that Sheedy can turn it around, but they have a lot of work to do. And All Ireland, I think, is a little bit beyond their reach this year. I think Sheedy should obviously go for it. He will be going for it. But if he wants silverware, I think the league is gone now. The Munster League final he missed out on as well. Clare wiped the floor with him that day. So he's down to two trophies now. It's Munster and All Ireland, and look, there's nothing to say they can't do it, but I think it's improbable.
I saw a weird one last night before we move on to performance of the weekend. They put up the league table in Division 1 on League Sunday, and Limerick had a plus, I think it was about 16 score difference, and
16,
every other team was in the minuses. I thought that was a weird one.
Yeah, that was mental, actually. I did notice that yesterday. To think that, you know, the other teams are all on 4 points. Limerick are only on... they're only on 6 points. It's not like they're way ahead, no, unbeaten or anything. And the rest of the teams obviously are chipping in. It's so up and down. Look, some people are saying it's been a poor league. There's not a lot to play for. But, you know, it just shows that in the top 7 or 8 teams, there is not much between them, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely not. All right, come here. We'll come back and we'll do Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
It's tough. I won't tell lies. There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you. But again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. You've lost your leash, man. But it's a long 6 years for us there. And we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was Tuesday morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid. And he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
Right, Paddy Power performance of the weekend, and the first nomination is Tim O'Mahony. So we only saw highlights of this one, but one thing I was interested in finding out off you, why Brendan Cummins was so surprised to see him pulling on a puck out. Is this so old school that this just doesn't happen anymore, that, like, I mean, everybody just puts their hand up and you don't have to worry about getting the clatter? I think Tim O'Mahony actually broke his hurl pulling across a whole group of lads. Like, I mean, it's definitely a throwback. I remember seeing it a lot in the 90s and early 2000s anyway.
Yeah, it's definitely at inter-county level now at this stage. Not too many do it, you know, frequently. There is times and time that they will do it, but I suppose in highlight package you're just picking out one or two things. But I like Tim O'Mahony. I think he's a fine hurler. He's big, he's rangy, he's able to score. You know, so he's a fine, and clearly he's not afraid to mix it, because, you know, he pulled his hurl yesterday, and, you know, he met Jack O'Connor with a right shoulder a couple of weeks ago against Wexford as well. So he's laying down a marker there. For a young player, you love to see that little bit of bite in him, and he certainly is doing that. So
he definitely does.
He's a good joke.
He is. He's a funny kind of a run on him, doesn't he? Like, I mean, he's gangly.
Yeah, he is. He's rangy. He's rangy. Never really caught too much, not caught too much for pace. So again, there was the debate here last week, you know, what should they do against the likes of Clare? You know, does he sit in the pocket, or you know, what happens from that perspective? If he's going to sit in the pocket, that's where your midfield and half forward line have to come back and protect him.
Yeah, come back and give him a handout. Yeah, no, I like him, I have to say. Danny Sutcliffe. So where's Danny Sutcliffe been for the last few years is what the question I want to ask. So he's, like, I mean, he dropped off the panel with Ger Cunningham, said he was going away travelling. Like, I mean, reading between the lines there, he didn't have much time for Ger Cunningham. He scored 4 points from play yesterday, and for me, he's gone off the boil nearly since that kind of thing with Cunningham where he took the year out. But he was playing centre forward yesterday, and he was marking Austin Gleeson, and Austin Gleeson was doing the centre back holding the middle thing, so he had a free roll and he ran amok. He got 4 from play. He directly assisted another 1-2, and he was fouled for 2 of Oisín O'Rourke's tally of 11. So, like, I mean, you're looking at 4 from play, another 1-4. He's looking at directly involved with 1-8 here.
Sutcliffe's class, to be fair to him, and that is the medicine for someone like Austin Gleeson at centre back. Put a scorer on him, you know, that you'd lick your lips at that now, being honest.
Yeah.
I know Austin Gleeson is going to hit a few balls, but he's going to be so preoccupied with chasing the ball and wanting to hit himself and then he's scoring himself, that it's exactly the thing to do, where Sutcliffe could have been marked tightly by one of the wing backs and maybe, you know, would have had to work an awful lot harder. And the other thing is, centre forward gets most chances and he's in straight into the goal. Like, it's not rocket science, really. Like, you know, if you offload the ball to those centre forwards that are lively, you know, they'll get great chances. It's complete antithesis to the old style centre forwards. You stand in and break up the centre back and pull in it and keep it moving. But I think teams over the last number of years have begun to realise that centre forward, it's a great place to play. I love it myself, and it's where you can get an awful lot of scores from. But to go back to Sutcliffe himself, he obviously burst onto the scene a number of years ago. It was fantastic. He roasted, which is not too often this happened, he roasted Tommy Walsh on a few occasions, pure from speed and pace and just powerful running, and obviously able to score as well. And probably that was a little bit of a throwback to that yesterday. So, look, I think, same thing, I think he probably needs to build his confidence up. When you do walk away from the Inter County game, I'm sure it's hard enough to get back into it, because it's such a step up in level.
Yeah, no. And like, on the flip side of that, is Austin Gleeson not completely wasted there? Like, a brilliant forward who can do special things, then suddenly getting a roasting at centre back that maybe Tadhg De Burka, when he comes back, would be a lot more comfortable in that holding centre half back role, than might not be as spectacular, but, you know, is Austin Gleeson completely wasted there and getting roasted by a fella?
Gleeson's problem is he's so good, he's been tried everywhere, and probably underage he used to play an awful lot of centre back. Yeah. He won 21 at Ireland at centre back, so he's able to play anywhere. He started out as a young wing forward, just because he was 18 years of age coming onto the team, and he was just a brilliant talent, and he scored one of the best goals ever seen in Thurles against Cork a couple of years ago. So he's just a fantastic talent, but it's, where do you play him? He had a free reign the last couple of years with Waterford, and he's probably frustrating to hurl with, because he will shoot from anywhere.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the best team player at times. So I'd say they're trying to find out, well, where do we actually play Austin Gleeson? Because it's a hard one. We have something similar. Obviously, he's not at the same level as Austin Gleeson. We have something similar with Keelan Kiley here in Offaly. Similar type of player, big, rangy, can strike it off both sides. And it's just, what is actually his best position? I think they need to find one for Austin Gleeson, and just, leave him there and let him be the best he can be in that particular position.
Yeah, that's the problem, because we saw him at centre half forward, and definitely against Cork anyway. Cork end up putting a corner back at centre half back and man marking him. So the poor Austin Gleeson's so good that he doesn't even get that bloody free rein that a lot of centre half forwards get.
No, definitely not. And the other side of it then is it's how you counteract that with Waterford, because Waterford at that time were probably playing only one inside in the full forward line. But if they're playing a little bit more traditional, and if they've two or three inside, at least they should be able to counteract that move a little bit better. And if Austin Gleeson's been marked tightly, he can create space and be selfless for the team and create space for other players and essentially work your way into the game. So
sorry to cut you off, actually. That's just after springing to my mind. If the cornerback's come out to play centre-back, then the centre-back's probably gone into the corner, and you could actually take him to the cleaners in there because he wouldn't like marking. But Waterford were never able to do that with the system they had.
No. And they were allowing, what they were invariably doing there was putting a man marker on Gleeson and then allowing their centre back, who probably a more natural hurler, to work as a sweeper.
There you go. Yeah.
No brainer from Cork's perspective.
Yeah.
I think it comes back to the Waterford style is actually forcing their hand there.
Yeah, so put him back centre forward under a different system, and we might see a different player completely at centre forward. You mentioned Bubbles. Bubbles is a good one, in that we talk about him a lot. Damien Hayes loves mentioning Bubbles, in that he's the best wrists that he's seen, like in the top few in the game, with the wrists. And it is, like, when Damien kind of said this to me, it's just effortless with Bubbles, the way he strikes the ball over the bar. He got, I think it was his first point where Tommy Walsh was up on his back and he shook him off and pushed him away and stuck it over, and it said in the commentary then that he stuck his fist up to the crowd. And, like, I mean, that's what you want to see from Bubbles, like, really, really up for it, because sometimes, because of his style of play, you think he's just kind of at his ease.
Yeah, I think it's getting that out of him consistently is Bubbles' problem. No one for 1 second questions his ability. I think he's been lazy in that perspective from his own approach to the game. It's like, look, I'm class, like,
right.
I don't need to bring that side to it, but you do, Bubbles. He just needs to get a little bit fitter too. He's borderline in terms of his fitness and carrying a few pounds, so you like to see him get a little bit trimmer and just, bring that work rate. And if he brings that work rate and that intensity, even on the ball, he shows he can do it. But Bubble's problem in the last couple of seasons is that it's very frustrating playing corner forward, but when you're only getting the odd ball and then you're trying to force a shot every single time you get it, a cornerback knows exactly what you're going to do and will shoot you out or shut you out a lot easier. Whereas yesterday, his movement was much better. He was getting across the field from left to right corner forward, and that's where he picked up, I think it was his third or fourth, I think it was his fourth point down the line. He completely lost his marker. So, that it was a really good step in the right direction for Bubbles yesterday, and something that it's a work in progress for Sheedy, because now we need to see a little bit more consistency from him. But he's obviously class, but he just needs to bring that other side of the game if you want to play consistently well at the top at the inter-county level.
Yeah, exactly. Conor Delaney, they were raving about him on League Sunday. He was compared to JJ Delaney. Now, he got a hard time of it against Limerick, so I'm not on the Conor Delaney. I'm a big fan of Hugh Lawler now. I've backed my reputation on Hugh Lawler, and I'm only joking. But Conor Delaney and Hugh Lawler are the same. They're converted wing backs, are they? So you'd want to see, obviously, him doing it on more consistently. He was obviously excellent yesterday, but for me, I know Jackie Terrell was saying we have the full back position sorted now. I wouldn't be so quick as to say that,
No, I wouldn't be as quick to say that either. But now, it's not often, William, you know I did this. I put him on the player of the week. Not often I'll put it back now on it, but I was impressed with his performance yesterday. What I like about him is that he was patient. You know, it was shown last night. He got back a couple of times with flicks. There's obviously a fine line in that. You know, he could have been not getting that flick in. It could have been an easy score, but he has nice shape to him in terms of he's good broad shoulders, has pace, he has everything that you need from a modern game. Hugh Lawler did play well in a couple of rounds, but physically he's not as imposing there maybe as Conor Delaney. You need to bring a lot of attributes to that full back position, and in the modern game you have to be used to being exposed as well, because full forwards again are fast now and they're out in front as well as being physical. You're looking at the likes of John Conlon maybe, or even Jonathan Glynn obviously after something different. So these full forwards are handfuls at the moment. So I thought he was excellent yesterday. You have to give him credit for the way he hurled yesterday. Jury's still out, I think maybe Jackie knows more than he's closer to seeing than we are, but I'd like to see another couple against him, but I was impressed with him, and I probably did see more from him yesterday than I did from Hugh Lawler.
Yeah, no, and that's important to point out. Jackie would know him a hell of a lot better than we would, so to be making a comment like that. But I do like that comment from you. He has the look of a good fullback, and he does. He looks like he fits there, doesn't he? He just kind of looks.
Yeah,
there.
He does. And I remember the first time I seen him was in a league game, Kilkenny against Offaly, and he just stood out to me. And I remember ringing one of the Kilkenny lads and saying, "Who's that guy? Tell me more about him," because I was actually really impressed with him. And he's never pushed on. This is 2 or 3 years ago, and I was like, right. Maybe I didn't see anything, and maybe I was daydreaming. Maybe Offaly were just brutal that day, but I just liked, as you said, the look out of him. Watch this space.
Yeah, no, exactly. A man who didn't ever have the look of a good fullback is Pádraic Walsh, even though he could do a job in there. He just didn't fit there. He didn't look. This is wrong. This is wrong. He should not be in
everything
there.
Wrong about it. Yeah, fully agree with you. He's been screaming, "Get me out of here," for the last couple of years. Sure, even when he was playing fullback yesterday, last year he'd be flying up the field and trying to score points. It's hilarious, really.
Yeah, and Conor Delaney be doing him a big favour, because a lot of the time, I'd say with Brian Cody, so many people were telling him to take Walsh out that he'd be like, "Don't be telling me what to do," and it was probably working against. Do you know, managers could get like that. No, I've made this call now, and the more pundits and experts try to tell him it's not working, the more he'll double down and say, "Well, it'll work." You know, that kind of way. But
I suppose he'd done it with JJ then as well. Obviously,
yeah.
JJ was arguably the best wing back in the game, along with Tommy, and you took JJ from wing back and you played him at full back, and he had a couple of teething problems initially going back in there, but eventually he worked himself into be the best full back in the game. So I suppose he thought himself, "I've done this before, I'm trying to make sure that we're not exposed to full back, and I'm going to put my best hurler there," and he will work there. But the problem with Pádraic Walsh at full back, apart from everything, is he's so gung-ho to the ball that if he doesn't win it, he does leave it wide open in there.
Right, okay. Interestingly enough, that Brian Cody gets all the credit for converting JJ into a fullback, but what JJ told us on the podcast last year is that Conor Lehan retired him from wingback with an awful roast, and I think it was in a league game. So JJ thinks he might have been relegated into that fullback rather than this brilliant master switch. Dermot Ryan is the last one. He was outstanding. I've talked him up. He's been on this Performance of the Weekend nomination before. Seems to have absolutely everything for a wing forward. Great at carrying the ball, can take a score, like I said last time, has a bit of devilment in him, and he's a big man. And they haven't really noticed David Reedy being gone this year at all with the emergence of this fella.
yeah, he's been super. Really impressed with him. And now the only thing, do you know what will finish the package for him, Willie?
What?
A good Cooper helmet. This two-tone helmet now is wrecking me head. So, boys and Claire, will you get him a nice helmet? Simple colour, blue, please, or whatever. And none of this underage two-tone helmets. Not for that now at all.
Why, is this a young underage fashion thing? The two colours?
Yeah, it would have been a big thing from the young lads coming up. But no, come on now. You have to look the part if you're going to be a top-class inter-county hurler. So, will someone get him a single colour there, please?
See, this is just the insights that I can't see in a match that you know what I mean, that you can see. So that's the difference. I don't know who I'm going to give it to.
I think Dermot Ryan. I just think for me, I'm going with Dermot Ryan. 4 points in play. He's doing it consistently well for a guy that's breaking onto the team. And of all the names you've named there, I think, as you said, he's been on it a couple of weeks now. So for me, it's Dermot Ryan.
Okay, we'll go with Dermot Ryan. So you're the expert. So we'll go. It's not often I ask somebody else to pick performance of the weekend, but you've carried the show on your own, Brian. So you deserve that kind of reward of picking.
Double bubble this week, boys. Thanks very much, Joe.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. So you might have to start negotiating with me now at the end of the month. Right, come here. Thanks very much, Brian. And we'll be back on Thursday with a preview show as usual. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.